Well, this morning is easy. Every rabbi who is speaking this morning has a fairly easy option. At least the choice of what to talk about is easy, although the sermon itself might not be. Because this morning's parsha, Pinchas, is the parsha that talks about the issue of being a zealot in the Jewish tradition. Pinchas, after all, takes it upon himself to murder another Jew, or to kill another Jew, depending on your view of Pinchas' action. And this triggers, as you might expect, throughout the history of Jewish commentary, a debate on the appropriateness not only of Pinchas' action, but also of his attitude. In other words, is it good to be a zealot? And given what is going on in Israel today, with the question of whether it is appropriate to defy military orders, to refuse government evacuation plans, the question of zealotry is alive in our midst and is worth at least a little bit of thought. Now, you know, America, even recently, is not foreign to this debate. I remember, even when I was a child, hearing about something that was said at the convention in 64 by Barry Goldwater, that extremism in defense of virtue is no vice. Do anybody remember that? Moderation in pursuit of justice is no virtue. And that kicked off a discussion that still exists today. All you have to do is Google it, as I did, about whether extremism is ever a good thing, and whether what Goldwater said was appropriate then or now. And the easy answer to this is the answer that most of us are inclined to give when you say, is it good to be a zealot? Which is, no. Zealotry is bad. Look at what fanaticism is doing all across the world today. People who take it into their own hands to do terrible things because they are convinced that they are right. But it's not so easy. Because even as we condemn zealotry, we benefit from it. I have this discussion with parents all the time. You always hear parents who say it's wrong to push your children. You shouldn't push your children. You shouldn't make them narrow or single-minded. And even though I am in great sympathy with that, I hear in my head the story of Isaac Stern, the great violinist, who, when a woman came up to him after a concert, answered her as follows. She said to him, "I would give anything, Mr. Stern, to play like you do." And he said, "Really? Would you give 10 hours a day every day of your life? Because that's what I gave." And you think, there's a zealot for you. But without it, you can't play the violin like Isaac Stern. Okay, even with it, most of us can't play the violin like Isaac Stern. But dafka, without it, you can't play the violin like Isaac Stern. And the truth is that zealotry is involved in many of the great causes of humanity. Can anyone say that the man who single-handedly revived the Hebrew language, Eliezer ben Yehuda, wasn't a zealot? When nobody in the world spoke Hebrew, he was forcing his kids to speak Hebrew. He made up words and then made them use those words. He was, unkindly, a nut. Kindly, a pioneer. It all depends. Zealotry is not so easy, nationally, internationally. John Stuart Mill, to whom we owe some of the most liberal doctrines in Western political thought. John Stuart Mill, who wrote a famous book, probably the first famous book written by a man in conjunction, actually, with a woman, called On the Subjugation of Women. He was the product of a zealot. When he was a child, his father force-fed him languages and literature. When he was 4 and 5 years old, he was reading Homer in Greek. He was reading Latin poets. You can read about this, by the way, in his fascinating autobiography, and read about the breakdown that he had when he was 20 years old. But his education was wider than almost anybody, probably than anybody's in England, and it allowed him to pull together sources from all over the world and produce masterworks. So in the end, did his father do a good thing or a bad thing? What about the founders of nationalist movements? What about Garibaldi and Ben-Gurion? They weren't, by and large, moderates. So it is not so easy to figure out whether zealotry is a good thing or a bad thing. And if you say, well, it depends what cause you're zealous in, then that's no more clear an answer than saying zealotry is good as long as it does something that I approve of. In Pinchas itself, in the Torah, it's not so clear. It seems as though the Torah approves of Pinchas' action. And in fact, the Hebrew word for zealotry is not only applied in the Torah, but in the Haftarah, as we will see in a moment. But we say of ourselves, Zrizim lemitzvot, we are zealous to do the mitzvahs, and that's supposed to be a good thing. We are zealous for God's honor in this world, and that's supposed to be a good thing. Even characters that we admire and that we think of in some way as calm and peaceful can be characterized as zealots. Forget Pinchas. What about Gandhi? Was Gandhi a zealot? A man who several times went on fasts and was willing to fast until his death, except that before he died, the policy that he opposed was revoked. And so he gradually began to eat again. Of course, you could say that he was fasting because he was opposing Hindu and Muslim zealots. So it's very complicated. I've spent the week thinking about this because I have been reading, as many of you have, news stories and editorials from Israel about what is permitted and what is forbidden. You know, now I'm told by friends who've recently returned from Israel, some of them in fact on this bima, that when you go to any major city in Israel, there's one person handing out an orange ribbon and one person handing out a blue ribbon. And if you oppose disengagement, you take the orange ribbon, and if you support disengagement, you take the blue ribbon. And which side is the zealot? I'm going to let you decide. But that passion is there. And sometimes the passion itself is so powerful that it overtakes our vision of why we're passionate. It's what Santayana said, that the fanatic is somebody who redoubles his effort when he's lost his aim. In other words, when you're not sure what you care about anymore, you care about it twice as much. Because being caught up in passion itself is a feeling that is powerful, and that brings us, I think, that sense, that idea, that passion itself has its own momentum and its own power, to the answer to zealotry that is given to us in this morning's reading. Because in the Torah portion, we read about a zealot. And in the Haftarah, we do too. That is, after all, what Elijah is. When he goes out into the wilderness and God says to him, why are you here? He says, Kano Kaneti, which basically translated, if you could translate it into English, means I'm a zealous zealot. But remember the context in which Elijah speaks to God. It is at the mountain, which parallels the Mount of Sinai. Here it is Carmel. And just as at Sinai, there is lightning, there's thunder, there are earthquakes. In other words, the whole world convulses. There is this powerful experience. And Elijah stands there and expects to be sent on a great mission because he is zealous for God. But then, of course, the Torah tells us that God isn't in the earthquake. And God isn't in the winds, the lightning and thunder. But God is in the silence, in the kol dimama daka. God's found in the whisper, in the softness, in what we, more modern terminology, might call in moderation. The mistake, of course, of the zealot is the inability to believe that he or she might be wrong, that someone else might have something to say, that truth never lies fully on one side. There's a beautiful story about the Chafetz Chaim, one of the great scholars in the world, that from time to time he used to go up to a child and say, "Teach me some Torah." And when his students asked him, "Why are you asking this child who's learning the alphabet to teach you Torah?" He used to say, "There is a little bit of Torah reserved for every soul that is only theirs, that God gives to them. And so this child has some Torah that wasn't given to me." Everyone on every side of the debate that is currently roiling in Israel and is tearing the country, everyone has on their side history, logic, sense, sometimes compassion and understanding. It's not so easy. But not everyone believes that the other side has it too. We tend to be tolerant about things we don't care very much about. But think about what matters most to you in this world. And then think if you're a zealot. We don't want God to save us from passion. Just from the passion that overwhelms the ego, puffs it up, and makes it think it knows everything. There is a principle in Jewish law that the good posek, the person who is not only a good understanding judge, but also a compassionate human being, will be machmir al atzmo umekil al acherim, will be strict with himself and generous with others. In other words, if you're going to be a zealot, that's okay. But your zealotry should be confined to your own faith, not to the faiths of those around you. You want to practice 10 hours a day? God bless you. Just close the door. The world benefits from zealotry, from passion, from devotion. But it needs the understanding that ultimately human beings can only live with each other if they know sometimes how to whisper, how to be soft, how to let go. It is my prayer on this Shabbat and at this time that people on all sides in Israel will understand that they do not stand alone in possession of all that is right and all that is good, that unto every soul is given a unique spark of Torah, and that ultimately the lesson of Pinchas is taught at Mount Carmel, that you can be a zealot, but you also have to listen, that there are times to scream, but you have to know how to be quiet. May God grant that our people learns the lesson not only of passion, but also of compassion, not only of strength, but of softness, not only of power, but of peace. Amen. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.